Father Hardin, a member of the Society of Jesus, is professor of systematic theology at the Bellarmine School of Theology, Loyola University, Chicago, Illinois. He is author of many books and articles published in the United States, Canada, and Europe. His latest book is Christianity in the 20th Century. Father Hardin is a lecturer and consultant to various national, religious, and educational enterprises. He is renowned as a retreat master and spiritual director. Father Hardin.
The sixth and last part of the General Catechetical Directory is entitled Pastoral Action in the Ministry of the Word. Its purpose is to outline in considerable detail how Catholic faith and morals are to be taught in terms of structure and organization. The scope of this part of the directory is to state and explain through what appropriate organs or channels catechetics should be carried out. It is in this context that the directory talks about the formation of religion teachers, diocesan and regional conferences of religious education, Catholic schools and Christian confraternity programs, collaboration with the Holy See, appropriate textbooks and approved catechisms, the use of audiovisual materials, and the need for scientific research. Out of this welter of issues raised and programs described, I consider two of special importance as underlying the rest. If these two are clearly understood and firmly accepted, Catholic religious education into the future is secure. Without them, all is in jeopardy, and the directory becomes just another document from Rome with only minimal impact on the lives of the faithful. One of these two elements concerns Catholic education, the other, Catholic schools. The title of our first lecture, therefore, is a question. What is the philosophy of Catholic education? Some people may wonder, why go into this question? Why go into it? Because self-appraisal is always healthy. In this case, those engaged in religious education should ask themselves, what are we doing? Or shall I change the accent? What are we doing? What is our purpose in teaching religion? Why go into the question? Because religious education is being challenged on all sides by some who claim you cannot teach religion, by others who say that Catholic religious instruction is divisive, and by still others who have so redefined religion so that in practice they eliminate religion from the curriculum. We had better know what religious education is if we are going to defend it, let alone be dedicated to it. you are not dedicated to the unknown. In entering our subject, I propose that we ask ourselves three subsidiary questions and answer them as pointedly as time will allow. What do we mean by education? Can religion be taught? What is distinctive about Catholic religious education? First, then, the meaning of education. It may seem far-fetched to ask the question, what is education? The obvious answer would be, it is what educators are doing. The trouble is, they do not always know what they are doing. If we ask the question, it might almost seem as though people had different ideas about education. And they do. Not only different, but divergent. And not only divergent, but even, surprise, in Catholic circles, contradictory. Depending on how you define education, your approach to religious education will be understood differently. Before answering the question, what is education? It may be useful to see what it is not. Since in the natural order, all of our knowledge of anything is shaped by contrast. As I never tire telling my students, contrast with something else. If a painter, he could be a Michelangelo, painted a white horse on a white canvas with white clouds and white sand, it might be the most beautiful painting in the world. No one would appreciate it. We come to know one thing by contrasting it with something else. Education is not mere instruction. It is not the mere imparting of knowledge to the mind. If it is authentic, it is directed to the whole person, mind and will, body and emotions. Even though necessarily, not every teacher can take care of all the faculties. Education is not mere pedagogy, the mere training of a human being in some skill. It is training, all right, but purposeful training, which is determined by a very definite philosophy of life. Nor, finally, is education mere exploration, a mere search for life's answers without ever finding them. For one thing, life would be too short. What is education? It is the development of a human being in all his faculties of body and spirit to prepare him for a happy and responsible life in this world and for a successful reaching of his destiny in the world to come. Properly understood, education assumes certain principles. They are the unspoken things I think we should bring to the surface. Drop any of these assumptions and you distort the concept of education. Valid education assumes, first of all, that human beings came into the world with numerous undeveloped faculties which others have the rare privilege and the duty to develop and to cultivate. This is not a platitude. In the deepest sense of the word, we are educated by others. Education needs educators. No one, barring a miracle of God, strictly speaking, educates himself. Secondly, valid education assumes that the most important element in the process of development is the person who educates. His own philosophy of life, his ideology, are crucial, because whether he likes it or not, admits it or not, these will shape the malleable person whom he educates. It is impossible not to have a philosophy of life in the one educating, and just as impossible for the pupil not to be affected by that philosophy. The third assumption is that this process of education is a process, but only because it is first a communication of truth from one mind to another. Education has myriad implications. Many things radiate from its center, which is the communication of truth, originally from the mind of God, through nature and revelation to the human race, and proximately from the teacher to the one being taught. Because education is communication, our fourth assumption is that without proper development, a person is deprived of his inalienable rights and of those means which he absolutely needs for his happiness and human fulfillment here and hereafter. The faculties are there, but they must be developed. Their development is education, and for that we need other people. A fifth and last assumption is that this development is not spontaneous, or less still, automatic. It is one thing to vegetate. It is another thing to grow. The development is impeded not only by the natural limitations of a person's abilities, which we know. I would call that a good definition of the grading system. The grading of human limitation. But also, we know that a person is limited by those irrational tendencies that militate against normal, proper, and authentic human development. Such functions as laziness and indifference, irresponsibility and imprudence, are part of man's nature. People are naturally lazy. Note the adverb, naturally. They are naturally irresponsible. They are naturally indifferent to other people's needs. They are naturally self-centered and egotistic. We can say this because we know what man's nature is. Faith tells us it is a sinful nature that must be taken into account in any sane, let alone Christian, approach to education. We ask our next lead question. Can religion be taught? The term religious education is ambiguous. It may mean that education is religious if the purpose or meaning is to know and fulfill the will of God. In this sense, all education, provided it is done with that kind of motive, is religious. How many times I've had to tell my own Jesuit students who look forward to a lifetime of teaching physics that, notwithstanding, they will be religious educators. It may also mean that education is religious if the methodology is religious. If all the subjects of the curriculum, no matter how nominally secular they may be, are integrated with a spiritual outlook, which comes out unwittingly and often unwillingly, everything in the school and about the teacher somehow reveals the spiritual and the supernatural. This is one reason it is important to have priests and religious teaching in a priestly or religious garb. Religious education may mean, furthermore, that the content of what is taught or learned is essentially sacred and not profane. It might be well for us to reflect for just a moment on the difference our culture has set between the concepts of the sacred and the profane. What is the sacred? How does it differ from the profane? Because of the adjectival level of religious education, we want somehow to deal with this amorphous, ambiguous thing called religion, using it here as an adjective to describe education with content that deals with the sacred. Again, we can best understand it by contrast with its opposite, or at least with its correlative, the profane or the secular. What is the sacred? That which is sacred deals with God. What is the profane? That which is profane deals essentially with the world. What is sacred is divine. What is profane is substantively human. A definition that I always use in teaching non-Christian religions is that the sacred is the absolute, the unchangeable, the ever-existing, whereas the profane is the relative. The not merely changeable, but constantly changing, and so, obviously, temporal. The sacred, therefore, is the eternal, and the profane is recognized by its being in space and time. On this last level, the sacred is the immeasurable, the infinite. The profane can be counted and numbered, collected and divided in dimensional categories. Religious education, as we understand it, should comprehend all three elements: the purpose, the integration with the religious atmosphere, and most importantly, the content. It is especially the last of these three that concerns us, which includes, as an essential part of its curriculum, the communication of the sacred to those who either believe in it already or are willing to receive it. And let me add, to nobody else. We now ask, what is distinctive about Catholic religious education? Without answering this question, we should not really be doing justice to the philosophy of teaching of religion, which is, for our purpose, the Catholic religion, taught under Catholic auspices, mainly to Catholic students, in Catholic institutions or programs. Our question is the pointed and, I might say, embarrassing one. How is it different from the religious education of Protestants or Orthodox or Jews? Catholic education is distinctive, that is, distinctively Catholic, in four ways. In being authoritative, in being certitudinal, in being salvific or sacramental, and in being by its very nature addressed not merely to the mind, but through the mind to the will, to get a response from human freedom. The first distinctive feature, then, of Catholic religious education is its recognition of a divinely constituted authority in the Church, where this authority, in this society, has received God's revelation. It is first to the Church, then to mankind. That sequence in the years to come will be one of the most crucial in the revolution through which the Catholic Church is now passing. That God spoke and speaks to the Church, and through that Church to mankind. God, Church, the human race. That's the triad. It is this same Church to which he has first of all communicated his revelation, not merely in some antediluvian sense, but to be preserved intact, unchanged, that he has committed the right and the duty to keep that revelation essentially unchanged. And lest I forget to hit the word that is so unpopular nowadays, the unchanging versus the word which is so precious nowadays, change. Whatever we say about those words, changing or unchanging, let us not forget that in teaching religion, whose focus is or should be mainly God, the finest metaphysical definition of God is the unchangeable one.
This conference is continued on Side B.